This is the Airplane Geeks Podcast. Our aim is to educate and inform you, explore and expand your passion for aviation, and entertain you a little along the way. This episode, we talk with the renegade aviator himself, David Costa, about being a jet airshow demo pilot, hosting the Renegade Aviator radio show, engaging young engineers in a project to set new jet records, and what he hopes the new normal will be. In the news, ALPA wants COVID rules and not just guidelines. Airlines use sale leaseback transactions for cash flow, a tragic runway accident, the unending Heathrow Airport controversy, Frontier rethinks their middle seat strategy, and Qatar Airlines wants training expenses reimbursed by a terminated pilot. Also, a new PBS documentary series about Pan American Airways, a Victorville flyover, and more great listener feedback. All that and more coming up right now. Welcome to the Airplane Geeks Podcast. This is episode 603 of the show where we talk aviation. I'm Max Flight, and with me is Max Trescott. He's host of Aviation News Talk Podcast. He's a CFI of the year, and he's an expert on the Cirrus aircraft. Max West, how are you?
Hey, Max, I am great. We were just talking a moment ago. I spent a good portion of yesterday watching old episode of Rat Patrol. So I'm now an expert on old 1960s TV shows as well.
There's quite a few of them from that era that are available, surprisingly, I guess, online.
Well, for anybody who cares, you can find all the Rat Patrol episodes on YouTube, and they are fun to watch if you enjoyed watching that back in the 60s.
Wow. All right. Also with us is David Vanderhoof, our aviation historian. Hi, David.
Hey, everyone. Hopefully you're doing well and not going stir crazy in this thing. I've been watching bad science fiction, so Rat Patrol might actually be a good thing to go hunt down. But doing well, looking forward to tonight because I get to say I'm David South.
That's right. We like symmetry around here, and we've got two Maxes and, of course, David Vanderhoof. So we thought we just had to find a guest named David, and we found one. It's David Costa. He's a jet airshow demo pilot. He's host of the Renegade Aviator radio show, and he's the CEO of Renegade Jets. The Renegade Aviator radio show promotes aviation to a really wide audience. They use, David uses interviews, stories from guests that demonstrate excellence and overcoming obstacles and achieving big goals. And interestingly, his audience is not just aviation enthusiasts, but there are others who admire and appreciate the radio show, which is also released as a podcast. Now, David is an airline transport pilot. He's got over 15,000 hours in over 100 different makes and models of aircraft. And, of course, he combines a jet airshow demonstration in his TS-11 Iskra jet with the Renegade Aviator radio show. So, David, welcome to the Airplane Geeks Podcast.
Hey, thanks a lot. I got Max and Max and David, right? Two Davids, two Maxes. I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
That's right. We're going to make it as confusing as possible, I guess, for our listeners. But we'll try to make do. But now, are you still active as a commercial pilot, or at least as much as anybody is these days?
Oh, yeah. I fly whatever I can get my hands on. I manage and operate corporate jets. I fly Lear 60s and Citation 650s and all kinds of stuff. We do test flying. You name it, we do it. I fly probably 10 different makes and models of aircraft in any given month, which scares my FOs to no end.
No doubt. And I understand your call sign is Taz, which is a reference to the Tasmanian Devil animated cartoon, which I guess tells us all something a little bit about you.
Yeah, some people might say I get a little bit wound up once in a while, but it's all, you know, with great love. You know, if you watch that Tasmanian devil, he buzzes around, spins and goes nuts, and then they play the, you know, Bugs Bunny plays music and he calms down. That's sort of me. I'm a little bit intense. I have passion for aviation. I have passion for excellence. And we believe in doing things right, having a good time at the same time.
All right. Well, coming up, we're going to talk about the show. We're going to talk about air shows, for one thing. We've been talking about some of the impacts of the quarantines, the pandemic on air shows and sort of the associated economies. And we're going to talk to David a little bit about that and what he's doing and some other topics as well. But first, we're going to jump into a little bit of the aviation news from the past week. Is everyone ready?
Ready from the west.
Ready from the north.
Throttle up.
Our first item comes from AvWeb. This is ALPA wants FAA to enact COVID rules. ALPA, of course, is the Airline Pilots Association. And Max T, we've seen that ALPA's got some thoughts on compliance to CDC recommendations.
I think last week we talked about one of the first airlines to announce their mask rule for passengers, and I think a lot of other airlines fell in quickly behind that. And I thought this was a really interesting point that ALPA is making, which is that right now there's kind of a patchwork of processes used by different airlines. And if you think about it, you might be changing aircraft, and on one airplane you have to wear a mask, and another you don't. One airport you have to wear it from the time you enter the building, another airport you don't. These are the kinds of inconsistencies that kind of break down, you know, the safety procedures that we have. And so they're just saying, let's make this all uniform. And to me, that makes a heck of a lot of sense. They mentioned, by the way, that Air Canada is going to start checking all passenger temperatures starting May 15th. I'm not sure what kind of devices they're going to use for that, but I guess that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. David, you might have some thoughts on having consistency in terms of safety requirements across airlines, do you think? Or do you think this, the airlines should each just decide on their own what they think is most appropriate?
Well, you know, I wouldn't be called the renegade aviator if I didn't throw a little bit of matchstick on the fire here once in a while. I do believe in standardization. However, the airline business is a business. And these COVID rules, restrictions, whatever you want to call them, they're all over the ballpark, and they're going to continue to be that way. What I'd like to see, and I think the quickest way to bring back the passengers, is to let the free market decide. If airline one wants to be totally crazy and test everybody from their fingernails to their temperature, that's great. Nobody might fly on them, or a lot of people might fly on them, and then vice versa. Somebody might have a little bit relaxed regulations, and they may find that the passenger load comes back. Obviously, safety first, but I'm a free market guy, so I'm sorry. I got to throw the match into the fire.
Well, wait a minute. I got to ask you, how could it be safety first if you just said free market? Aren't those two diametrically opposed?
Absolutely not. Because, you know, this is not operation of the aircraft, and there's too many open things with this COVID virus situation. I spent 30 years in medical before I came into the airplane. Well, I was in the airplane world at the same time, but there's a lot of question marks on this virus, and it's a dynamic situation. So in a dynamic situation, I believe that the free market can react most effectively most of the time.
Okay, so when you said safety first, you were talking about aviation safety.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Okay. Yeah, I misunderstood. I thought you were talking about health safety.
I'm often misunderstood. That's okay.
No, that's great.
Yeah, I mean, it. There are so many unknowns here, and I mean, there's no shortage of perspectives or opinions or presumptions or assumptions associated with this. So it's kind of hard to say there is one true path, maybe. But we know that one of the effects of all this, of course, has been meaning the pandemic, the virus. It has been the devastation on the airlines business, with
passenger loads down to 90 or down 95% even in some cases. And we see that Southwest Airlines has taken some action on 20 of their Boeing 737s, which generates a little bit of cash for them, $815 million.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of an interesting way to raise money. You know, Boeing went out and sold bonds, and various other companies are raising money in different ways. Pretty quick, easy way to raise money. Just go ahead and take aircraft that you're owned and turn them around to selling to a leasing company, lease them back. You know, at the end of the day, you still have the same number of airplanes, but you've got a lot of money in the bank to help pay your expenses. So I thought this was a clever way to go. I don't know what percentage of the fleet most airlines own. I mean, I would assume that a significant number of airplanes in any given fleet are leased. Obviously, if they're already leased, you can't do this. But if you own the aircraft, you can.
Yeah. And in this case, what Southwest has done is sold 10 Boeing 737-800s and 10 737 MAX 8 aircraft to BOC Aviation. And of course, one of the issues that the airlines are facing is you know, a cash crunch and managing that. So this is something that is not unique to Southwest Airlines. They've sold these to BOC Aviation, which is a global leasing company. They were originally founded in Singapore as Singapore Aircraft Leasing Enterprise, or SAIL. And they go back all the way back to 1993. But they're BOC Aviation now, headquartered in Singapore, but they have offices in Dublin, London, New York, and Tianjin. And BOC Aviation has actually completed some other recent buy leaseback agreements. One is with Wizz Air. That was for 6 new A321neo aircraft. And that was announced the beginning of May, May 8th, for delivery in 2020 and 2021. So these are aircraft that have not even yet been delivered by Airbus to Wizz Air, but they'll be delivered to BOC Aviation, and the title will be. Another example, Cathay Pacific, 6 Boeing 777-300ER aircraft will be placed on long-term leases, and BOC Aviation will own those. And that was announced back in the middle of March. It's a great way to – well, it's a great way. In the short term, it can be a great way to generate some serious cash flow.
Yeah, I'm wondering though if the leasing agent is ever going to be able to find anybody to lease the aircraft. I mean, the leasing agent's also taking a gamble on it.
Yeah, I mean, they're leasing it back to the airline that's going to operate the aircraft, at least at this point. But you're right, David, in that if something happens with that airline and they default or they return the aircraft because they're no longer needed, return them to the leasing company, then, that changes the economics, or it could change the economics. But it's a risk, you know, that's made all the time. BOC Aviation has purchased more than 900 aircraft since they were first formed. And currently they're owned by the Bank of China, actually. They acquired BOC Aviation in 2006 for just under $1 billion.
Well, that would explain the BONC.
All right. We see another. This is an unfortunate incident. This is from mysanantonio.com. Person killed by Southwest plane on Austin Airport runway. And this was a Southwest flight landing at Austin in Texas. And they struck and killed a man on the runway. You don't see that too often.
That's what I was thinking. I'm hard-pressed to remember an incident like this before. I'm sure they happen on rare occasion, but this was Friday night. Aircraft landing reported almost immediately after touchdown that he had seen a person on the runway. Well, not only did he see them, but it found out afterwards the cowling on one of the engines was severely damaged where they hit that person. They sent an airport ops person out and found the dead man along the runway. I've checked, and even 3-4 days later, there's still no update on this story. So we don't know who the person was, how they happened to be out on the runway. The only thing we know is that the person had no identification on them and they were not an airport employee. So beyond that, we don't know who they were and why they were out there on the runway.
Yeah, I mean, the only similarity that I have is growing up is it's amazing what a deer can do to a C-130, I was really sort of surprised. I saw the damage. I was like, oh, it's an animal strike. And then I read the article later. It was like, oh, that's not good at all. So, I mean, it's Austin's got some explaining to do. How did they get somebody out? You know, we talk about airport security. How does someone get out on the unfortunate of the strike, but how does someone with no ID get out onto a run out, not even beyond the gate, but out on a runway or out on an apron?
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you've watched any of the recent accidents, it looks like the investigations are being done remotely, sort of. I haven't heard of any people packing up their bags and flying from DC to do inspections of accidents. So it may be a while before we hear what happens on this.
Well, for the David and Max who are pilots amongst the four of us, have either of you ever had any close calls on runways with wildlife or other obstacles?
Wildlife, yes, a lot. But first time I've ever heard of a person being hit by an aircraft on the runway. You know, it's not impossible to get on these airports, and I don't think we can make it impossible. And this has been so rare. It's a freak accident. It's a shame for that person that got hit. But, you know, deer, coyotes, birds, never a person. That's a new one.
Yeah.
And actually, I do remember one person that was hit in very odd circumstances probably 3-4 years ago at Fraser Lake Air Park, which is a grass field that's perhaps 25 miles south of San Jose, California. And there was a guy cutting the runway on a lawnmower, and somebody landed, hit the guy on the lawnmower, and killed him. And the pilot, you know, contended that wasn't his fault, and he was sure that he could stop before he reached the lawnmower. So to me, that just shows really, really poor pilot judgment. I mean, why would given the choice of doing something perfectly safe, like going around, versus thinking that, well, I think I can probably stop before I hit this guy. It just seems like very poor choice to me.
Yeah, it does.
I agree.
There's an item in the Daily Mail. Heathrow third runway may never be built. Never is in all caps. And boy, you know, the third runway at Heathrow has been quite a contentious topic for many years. But what we see here is that Heathrow's John Holland Kay says that it could be 10 or 15 years before the airport needs a third runway. He's looking at the volumes that we're seeing now as a result of the pandemic, but also that the £14 billion expansion plan could be even scrapped, he's thinking, given the poor economic situation, or at least it's not a priority now. But there's a lawsuit actually from this year. In February, the Court of Appeal ruled that the decision to allow the expansion of the airport was unlawful because it did not take climate commitments into account. The judges said that in the future, there could be a go-ahead of the plan for a third runway as long as it fits with the UK's climate policy. So that's the environmental impact is an issue that's being used to block this runway, which is not surprising.
Yeah, it's funny. We've talked so much about the third runway at Heathrow and the controversy and the delays. Well, this is one way to end the discussion is have a pandemic. You know, we've also in Philadelphia been waiting to get a fourth runway, a third parallel runway, and they've been working on that project. But, you know, I wonder if that's going to affect us at Philadelphia too. I mean, there's if all of that traffic is going to diminish over the next 10 years, you know, I mean, do we go forward with this kind of construction project?
I think there's a lot of infrastructure. Well, maybe not a lot. I think there are probably going to be a number of infrastructure projects that don't get built or get delayed for many years because of this. You know, in particular, you look at commercial real estate, and I think that's very uncertain as to what that's going to look like a few months from now. And I would imagine there are fewer people that are, you know, willing to invest their money in a, you know, a brand new building that's not yet occupied than there were, you know, 6 months ago.
No, but there'll be a lot of buildings that are half occupied 6 months from now.
Oh, yeah, that have already been built. Yep.
Well, maybe I'll channel some renegade aviator here and maybe propose a different viewpoint. Maybe this is a great time to build infrastructure. Maybe this is a time when those costs are going to be lower than they would be in the future. And, you know, I just see that. This starts to get a little political, so I'll be careful. But I see a lot of people kind of looking at the terrible situation that exists right now and projects that just into the future for some distance. There's kind of an assumption in some people's thinking that we're not going to get back to the way it was or even close to the way it was. And I don't know. I'm not sure that that's going to prove to be the case.
You know, I initially, very early on, thought this was going to be a ricochet. It's like up, down briefly, back up very quickly. You know, not much will change. And then obviously, it's become clear that, you know, things were a lot worse than that. But I think this is, a great opportunity for people to reexamine everything and just kind of say, hey, given the new circumstances, should we, you know, reconsider what we were planning to do in the past?
Yeah.
Well, and it really does depend on how many people get back out to the airports, how many people go back out there, you know, let's just talk general aviation. They get back out there and get flying and start utilizing those assets, they go back and start traveling for business unafraid. It's really going to require that. Fear is going to keep everybody down. Fear is going to keep everybody in slow motion mode. And really, we get fearful when we don't have all the information, you know, false expectations appearing real. That's what I say all the time. And I believe that it's up to the aviation community to, if we want aviation to be vibrant moving forward, we need to make that first step. Each and every one of us, get out to those local airports, get out to the airports and experience aviation. It has to be experienced.
Yeah, yesterday I was outside doing some yard work or something, and I heard something that I hadn't heard for quite a while, and that was a Cessna flying overhead, and I kind of got a warm feeling. Now it's so quiet around here because there's so little traffic that you can hear, you know, anything, and just to hear this loud, noisy relative Cessna flying overhead. It was just like, yeah, there's a pilot out there flying, and it just felt good. It was really a strange feeling. I've never felt quite that way with a Cessna flying over my house.
It has been bizarrely quiet. I used to sit here at my computer, work away, and I would hear, you know, jets whistle by every 5 minutes and kind of wonder, what kind of jet is that? And, you know, whip out and see, all right, okay, so that's what the sound of a such and such jet, you know, sounds like. But boy, it seems like I can go days and not hear an airplane pass overhead.
Yeah, it's really an unusual time. Some of the airlines are making kind of strange decisions or ones that don't seem to be too popular. And Max, Frontier Airlines has been an example of that perhaps recently.
I thought this was a really interesting turnaround. Frontier announced at one point that they were going to charge passengers $39 if they wanted to have an empty seat next to them. So I guess that would be a guaranteed no middle seat. And they didn't maintain that policy for more than, I don't know, a week or a few days. There was a tremendous amount of pushback. I guess some folks in Congress were unhappy with it. I got to tell you, this is a case where when I first heard of it, I thought, okay, that's not unreasonable. I'd be willing to pay $39 to sit a little farther away from somebody. I didn't object to it at all when I heard it. So I was really kind of surprised that there was any pushback on this.
I think, Max, it really was 24 hours because the next morning after they announced it, they were on CNN. He was saying, well, we've changed that decision. I guess it's an optics thing on this, because like you said, and David said, I personally, being 6'4", would be like, okay, that's not bad. You know, I pay an extra $30 so I get 4 inches in front of me. You know, I'll take an extra seat beside me for $40. But from an optics standpoint, I think it was poorly framed. It's like, if you want to be safer and you need that extra seat, here's the extra $40. Had they sold it as buy one seat, get one half off, you know, it might have been take it better. But sometimes good ideas framed poorly turn out to be poor ideas.
And you kind of wonder if long term they'd be able to sustain that anyway. It seems that the utilization rates are going up. There was a picture that was posted on Twitter a few days ago that's gotten a lot of press. A doctor on a flight from New York back to the West Coast said that he was on a full flight, and you know, shot a picture there from the front row, and you could see people in masks as far as you could see. And there's no way they could have blocked off middle seats on that aircraft. So I don't know how Frontier, you know, would have done that long term anyway.
Yeah, I think the airlines are struggling for revenue, and they know that if they're not going to fill the planes, they are thinking about how do they recover from that revenue loss. Frontier called this the more room fee. That's the name of it, more room.
And, I love it.
Yeah. And they got blasted because people, you know, rightly or wrongly, said that Frontier was attempting to profit from the virus and people's fears and so forth. And, of course, Frontier's CEO, Barry Biffle, said that, well, that wasn't the case at all. He said, we recognize the concerns raised that we are profiting from safety, and this was never our intent. He said, we simply wanted to provide our customers with an option for more space. I think they simply wanted to generate some more revenue from their customers.
I think they were trying to get people to get on the airplane to fly. I suspect that they could sell more tickets if they offered a guaranteed empty middle seat. I mean, I would be more inclined to fly.
Yeah, true. Yeah, yeah.
And $40 is a bargain. I mean, it's a bargain for the paying customer. Our airline, I used to fly for Independence Air. I don't know if anybody remembers that airline. Oh, yeah. But with a full aircraft, when our Airbus was full, we made $5 per passenger profit.
That's some pretty
smart. Razor. Yeah, of course, we're not around anymore, so that may show you that business plan. But there's not a lot of profit in operating these aircraft.
All right. One final item from AvWeb. This is Qatar Airlines demands training repayment from fired pilot. I don't know. This kind of seems like there's more to this story, but Qatar Airlines, they fired a pilot. And that pilot had been part of the cadet scholarship program that they had instituted. And this particular woman joined that program in 2013 and graduated in 2017. But she's being fired, laid off, let go. I'm not sure what, but they want some of their money back.
Some?
Some? I thought it was like every dollar that they thought they spent on training her.
$162,000.
No problem. I could imagine any new first officer could just write a check for that amount. No problem. It's ridiculous. I mean, the fact that she apparently finished in 2017 means to me that, you know, she had met her part of the bargain, which was to study hard and to be qualified and to be able to fly for them. Apparently, she's been flying for them for 3 years since then. If it was just a layoff where they're laying off, you know, more than one person, then you got to really question, you know, the legitimacy of asking for the money back when you're not giving them the opportunity to fulfill their end of the contract. Now, if it was just one person that was fired for cause, well, then maybe they have a case. But that's a huge amount of money to try and get back from an employee.
It is. It just seems completely unreasonable. It would be nice to know the circumstances of her being let go. I mean, was there something specific about her, an individual, or is there a group of pilots that, you know, they're just trying to cut back on employment level? And the other question would be, assuming that there's an employment contract in place here, what does the fine print say? I mean, that's what I would want to know, I think.
Yeah, I do a lot of litigation work. And in the litigation work we do in aircraft accidents, things of that nature, it's amazing what we don't know. So that seems to me is, one, a CEO of a company and a guy that operates these jets and a guy that trains people to what we know from litigation and the other work that I do, there's something else that we're not being told. This is either gross negligence on her part or gross incompetence on her part, or we have something else going on. I really doubt a company of that size would go this big for one. You know, it just doesn't make sense to me.
And I did a quick search here while we were talking. On AlJazeera.com 5 days ago, they had a story that said that Qatar Group has 46,000 staff as of the end of the last fiscal year, and that they said that they will lay off staff as travel bans caused largely grounded the industry. They said, okay, they offered no specific figures, but an emailed memo from its CEO that was leaked said the number of employees laid off would be substantial. So,
yeah, the question is she part of that, or were there some other reasons?
Yeah, when I hear fired, you know, fired versus laid off, fired is incompetence or poor attitude usually. You know, it's one of those two. You know, anything else we can kind of fix, but interesting, yeah. Very interesting.
Well, David, you seem to be kind of thoroughly immersed in aviation of a variety of different flavors, the pilot, the air show fly. Let's talk about your air show flying a little bit. The jet you fly, that's a Polish trainer. Is that what that is?
Yeah, it's a Polish advanced trainer, 50 plus years of active military service. There's not many military aircraft that can make that claim. This is the advanced jet trainer that the Polish and the Indian militaries used prior to moving into aircraft like the MiG-21 or something along those lines. It's a real docile, fun to fly, and since it's a 1960s vintage jet, underpowered aircraft.
Oh, come on. It's a tube with wings.
Yeah, and burns about 140 gallons an hour just sitting there on the ramp.
I understand you have three of them. Is that correct?
We have three because we can't fly air shows with anything less than three. we always want to make sure we have an operating aircraft, a standby aircraft, and then one aircraft that's in modification. We're getting ready right now. The original Iskra went out and achieved four world records. We're going to go out. We're going to break this with you guys. Really exciting is that we're going to go out now and launch a world record attempt. We're going to go after the original Iskra records, and then the Italian Impala beat the Iskra in the late 60s, and those records have stood. So we're going to modify the Iskra using the next generation of aerospace professional, kids of college age. I say kids because anybody under 35 or 40 is a kid. But we're going to use this next generation of aviation professionals to help us improve this aircraft and go after some really cool stuff in the world record side of this.
So this is sort of going to be a learning experience for them or a way they can apply their knowledge?
Absolutely. We have questions for them. How do we reduce weight? How do we reduce drag? How do we increase thrust? And how do we make this aircraft more efficient overall? And these are great challenges for engineering students. These are great challenges for even the aviation, the hands-on people, the people that are doing modern-day composites, the aviation mechanics and avionics people. What we're trying to do is to spark some life with this new generation of kids. They think differently. They've got great ideas. We're going to hand them the controls to the process and let them help us design this. So it makes a cool splash at the air shows. We get a better performing air show jet. And in the meantime, while we're grounded, because of the pandemic, we can be out there doing something positive and proactive and get this aircraft doing other things. So it's a really cool aircraft, a streamline. It has stock. It has the performance of an L-39. People that are familiar with that aircraft. But what we're planning to do is to put an American engine in it, American ingenuity and technology, and make this thing a fire breather.
I love this. Now, where are these young engineers and folks coming from? How are you identifying them?
We're just starting this now, so you'll hear more. Our initial launch is coming before the end of May with our public launch, but I'll give you kind of the inside scoop here a little bit. Since we've got three airframes, we're moving one aircraft as we speak. Next week, we're moving that out to the East Coast. It's near a lot of other universities, and the other two will stay with me here in the Reno area. And we're going to start our splash from there, so that the two flyers that we're using now remain with me in Minden, and our Jet 509 is being taken down, and it's going to be the modernization platform for the next set of test flights that we're going to do.
And what are the records that you hope to beat?
Well, the Iskra holds, and I don't have all the numbers emblazoned in my head, but it has a speed over a 15 and 25 kilometer course record. This is the original records it set. It had an ultimate altitude record. It had a sustained altitude record. And then it didn't do any efficiency records, but there's some stuff we can do now with the current things that are in the FAI, the Federation for, you know, all the smart people that keep track of all these records for us. And they were beat by that Italian Impala jet. So we're looking at speeds in excess of 525 miles an hour out of a jet that weighs well under 6,000 kilos. It's pretty neat.
Then are you going to race it at Reno?
We've raced, our team has raced about four seasons at Reno. No, we are sticking to air shows and world records. I love the people at Reno, great people. It's a great event and I support it, but, I just don't like flying low and turning left all the time. I like to turn right. I like to go straight up and down. I like to flip nose to tail. I like to do all kinds of other stuff. It just got a little bit boring turning around in circles all the time. So at the air shows, we can interface better with the crowd. We can shake people's hands. You know, when I was a little kid, I remember Lieutenant Colonel Roger Parrish. He was the Thunderbird number one, and I watched them fly in Atlantic City, New Jersey. And after they flew, I got to shake his hand. He changed my life. I mean, my dad got me started in aviation, but meeting an air show pilot, that was so cool. And it took me through and it made me crazy. I mean, look at me. I'm crazy now. I'm doing all kinds of stuff, but I'm doing what I love, aviation, a passion. And that's what we're trying to bring out of everybody who we meet with. And we can do that better at air shows.
Yes, yes. You know, in days past, a lot of people would listen to podcasts in their car, and so it really wasn't generally too important to give people web addresses during, you know, on the show, instead referring people to the show notes. But I think right now, probably a lot of people are sitting at home, perhaps in front of their computer even. So I think it's worth mentioning, if you're looking for the Renegade Aviator radio show, that's Renegade AV, the number 8 and R. I think most of our listeners are familiar with that way to say aviator. And the website is renegadeaviator.com. How long have you been, David, operating that the radio show?
The radio show is 2 years in syndication with the Salem Radio Network. We did it about a year prior to that, and not, you know, we were just kind of getting our feet wet. So, as you can hear, I'm not a radio professional, but I play one on the radio. So, you know, when I went to ICAST, the International Council of Air Shows, and I showed up as this new air show pilot, right? A guy that's got a lot of flight time, but you're a newbie in this new world. I said, how can I be of value back to this community, which is the airshow community. What can I do different? I'm not Sean Tucker. I'm not a well-known name, although I would love to fly as part of the Blue Angels. That's not going to happen. So when I looked at things I could do instead of things that I wished I could do, I said, I can do a radio show. I can get out there and I can talk to people every week. So that when we can prompt them to take a new interest in aviation and the air shows. And then when they come out to the air shows, we'll know them, we'll recognize them, and we can be of some small service to that local airport, that local air show, and that aviation air show performer and people with just cool stories. So although I love to talk, my show is not about me talking. People tend not to like that for very long.
Yeah, I had not been aware of it. And about a month ago or so, I subscribed to the podcast version of that. And the episodes are, yeah, they're very interesting. And you have some interesting conversations. And you did tease the record attempts coming up a little bit not too long ago without getting into too much detail. So I'm glad we were able to hear more details about what you're doing there. But for those who may not be familiar, maybe tell us some of the recent guests or topics that you've covered.
We've had Kyle Franklin. So we had Kyle on. And if you've watched the whole Franklin family, for those of us that have been watching air shows for a long time, you know, Kyle Franklin is the son of Jimmy Franklin. So that whole family has had the ups and downs in the air show industry. We had The recent Kristen, her call sign is Bayo Wolf. She's the F-35 demo pilot. Real interesting story there. We've had people that have flown the A-12. That's the predecessor for the SR-71. You want to hear a cool interview, go back and look at that one. He calls the SR-71 the family model because it's so slow. So we've had, Gene Soucy on. We've had Bill Stein. We've had, two buddies of mine, Jared Floor, who flies an A-4 Skyhawk. Here's a guy, fairly young guy, that has never been a military pilot and has had the opportunity to get checked out and fly an A-4 Skyhawk at air shows. So what I try to do with these people, Vicky Bensing, I mean, I can just keep on naming air show performers. Each of them has a story. And we look out there and see that person perform out in front of the crowd, and we think it must have been easy for them. They must have had something easy or some foot in the door. And each one has a story that's unique and different, but they all come down to the same thing. Work really, really hard. Stay focused. Never give up. And in 20 years, you'll be an overnight success. Imagine that.
Yeah, yeah. I imagine that it's maybe more work to be an air show performer than people might assume, even though the routine may be something that is repeated over and over again. But for you, what makes it a challenge, or what are the the differences between one performance and another?
Well, in our jet, being an experimental exhibition jet that's a former military jet, there's a lot of preparation that goes into every flight. We have an obligation. With every great liberty, there's a great obligation, a great responsibility. So safety is number one. So for a day prior to us flying that aircraft, the aircraft has gone over and inspected. When I get out to the airport to get ready to do a simple practice flight, we go in and we brief. It's an hour-long brief. Here's what we're going to do. Here's how we're going to do it. We go out and fly the flight, and then there's another couple hours of debrief after that. And a lot of stuff that I train pilots in general, get out there and learn those emergency procedures. Get out there and really understand your aircraft, learn it inside and out, have a plan, have a backup plan. So flying an experimental jet like the ISCRA, it's, in some aspects, flying a jet is very, very simple. They're easier to fly than a lot of other aircraft than you'll see out there. But with that simplicity, it can lure you astray. And things happen a lot quicker at 500 miles an hour than they do at 110 if you're flying a Pitts or 150. So when we go out there and now you bring that air show down to air show performance level, there's a lot of checks and balances that that I go through and every air show pilot goes through, things and gates that we will not violate. So most of my practice, it's not how to fly a loop or how to do a 4-point roll or how to fly inverted at 50 feet. It's what do I do if I didn't meet the gate prior to that maneuver? What's my out? Where do I go next? What do I do if this happens? And that's the fun part of it. My only goal flying air shows, here's a real simple goal for air shows: never be a subject of a debrief at an air show.
Mm. Yeah, you don't want that.
I never want to astound air show performers because the crowd on the ground doesn't really know what they're looking at, right? They know, hey, that's cool. It makes a lot of noise. That's really neat. But if I ever thrill experienced air show performers, I've done a really, really bad thing. It's supposed to look dangerous, but we're supposed to be, we are not supposed to thrill each other as professionals where you go, oh my God, I never knew that airplane could do that.
Yeah, yeah. Do you have much opportunity typically at air shows to interact with the crowd? I don't mean during the performance, but before or after the performance, do you get the opportunity to do that?
Yes. And that's why now with this social distancing and all this going on, one of the last shows I did was that the new normal is the old normal. An air show, for it to remain vibrant and relevant, most of what we do at an air show is after you fly, is shaking the hands of the people in the crowd, talking to them, answering their questions. You know, it may be the same question 50 times for you as a performer, but to that person who walked up, it means a lot to listen to their stories, to understand why did they come out? What did they like about this air show? We need to be up close and personal, and we are not. So here's one thing I've learned this from very experienced air show pilots. It's not how you fly. We all assume that we will fly safely and we're going to do our best to, you know, put on a great show, but we are performers. And the reason we're there is for the fans, the people who show up at that air show. We are there to serve the fan. If the fans come out, the air show promoters can get in sponsors. It's easy to bring sponsors when you can pour people through that gate. So it's really selfish for the air show performer that flies and walks away. I want to be standing next to that jet. And that's why I love that. Radio and podcasting and internet and videos, that's great. But I'm, you know, although I'm the Tasmanian devil, I get a little bit wound up. I'm a pretty fun, lovable guy.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah, yeah. And it's so unfortunate that what you're describing is not happening right now for obvious reasons. And I know you've talked a lot about, well, the impacts of that, not only on air show performers, but on the public that doesn't have the benefit of the performances and the kinds of interactions you're talking about. But the path to return is kind of uncertain right now.
It's very uncertain. I can tell you that there's been conversations within the air show community of a drive-in air show. I don't see how it'll work. I just don't see it. Now, some people may say Dave Costa is an idiot. Don't listen to Dave Costa. He's just a renegade aviator. What does he know? But I'm saying the new normal has to be the old normal. These flyovers with our Blue Angels and Thunderbirds, they're great. We all love to see airplanes fly, but it is not a substitute for the value and the power and the passion that gets put out at air shows. Every one of us here on this call, I would venture to say, we have air show stories. I've been at a DC-3. I used to fly an old DC-3 at air shows. I've had grown men come up to me in tears because they were part of the D-Day invasion for that simple little airplane. And I've had the next generation of kids watching this, watching some old man, right, that now is some old man. But he was once that 18-year-old kid that's sitting there dumbfounded going, oh my God, I had no idea of the history. So it is an ultimate patriotic event is air shows in this country. It shows our strength. We need to go back, and we need to go back in force, because without the sponsors, we don't have an air show. And sponsors need numbers of people. Do they not? We all face right. that as podcasters and radio show hosts.
Yeah, I was just thinking about the drive-by air show. You know, in essence, you've got enough parking spots to get all those people who arrived at the air show. It seems like you could have virtually about the same number of people show up. And if they're sitting in their cars enjoying, not that different from the drive-in movie theater. I mean, I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, but, you know, it'd be hard to see us. I mean, there's a lot of challenges. And I'm not going to put down anybody's idea. Although we're all opinionated, I'm very opinionated. I love new ideas. So kudos on people that are thinking, hey, you know, we need it. We need something to make this spark. So I'm not going to be negative, because I choose not to be right now. but as a hair on fire, throttles forward, you know what? I just, from my own standpoint, I'm a former Marine Corps special ops guy too. So don't hold all this stuff against me. I'm semi nuts. And I grew up and joined the carnival called air shows. And I just got to believe that as we bring people back, you know, in the 1960s, in the late 1960s, there was a pandemic. It killed over 100,000 people in this country, and we had Woodstock soon after. So,
and a big aspect of the air shows is listening to the announcer, so you know what the heck is going on. And at places like Sun and Fun and EAA, they've already got radio stations that people could hear throughout the entire parking lot. I mean, it seems like you could drive up, dial into the right frequency in the radio, and you're going to get a lot of what you would get by being out at the show.
But that's a potential solution if the new normal is different than the old normal. But I think what David's advocating is that the new normal needs to be the old normal. That's where the value is.
That's our goal. Always have a goal, right? And it's not that the old normal was perfect. I've got callers into my show and fans that waste no time. I'm sure you get people who contact you through your show and they go, hey, air show's got to keep up with technology, virtual reality. How many air shows I've seen this? I don't know if you have. I've seen kids watching the live streaming air show on their iPhone while the airplane is flying at 200 feet above the ground in front of them. And I grabbed one of the kids' iPhones and tried to steal it from him, and his parents caught me. But I go, yeah, look out there. There's your show. Yeah. But so that's valid. You know, Max was saying that right there. Maybe there is some validity in change. I don't know. As you can see, you know, if you get Taz all wound up, I mean, he'll stop thinking. But maybe we all have to think a little bit more. I like it.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Very good. So renegadeaviator.com, and that's the place where you can find just about everything. Any other sites or social media places where you like to hang out, David?
Well, I would call it lurking more, I guess. But it's, we're on Facebook, we're on Instagram, we're on LinkedIn, we're everywhere. Just type in Renegade Aviator, AV, the number 8R. And if I never learned how to spell properly, but if you spell properly and you type in Renegade Aviator, it'll still go to my website. But just Google us, search us, reach out, listen, like, and share. And, you know, Max, I want to thank you. And I want to thank, you know, Airplane Geeks for even thinking to have me on. I'm absolutely grateful to you guys. You got a great show, and I'm grateful to be a small part of this show. So thanks again.
Well, we're really honored that you've been able to add your voice to these issues, because I think you've got some really important things to say and important things to do. And I'm really excited about your latest project with the kids, the emerging engineers, the new generation, let's say, of engineering talent, and getting them to apply themselves into a project like this, like going after some of the records for the jet. I think that's great. So I assume you'll be talking more about that on your show.
We will. We'll be giving updates on that as we go. When we launch, when we do our hard launch, we'll have a special page set up for all that information, ways people get involved. We're looking for corporate sponsors and aircraft sponsors, like everything. None of this is free. But we know that this will be of big value. It'll get people excited. And to see this new generation take their current knowledge of what we have today to an airplane over a half a century old, and let some crazy guy also over a half century old go ring this bird out, I think it's going to be fun.
I really like that, because so many college engineering classes are looking for good senior design projects. I still remember the civil engineering guys at my school were building concrete canoes, which I thought was pretty bizarre as an electrical guy. But you know, to me, there would be nothing more fun than actually getting to work on a real airplane as part of a senior design project. So I think it's fantastic.
Yeah, and being able to stand there at an air show as the jet flies overhead and turning over, looking over to your friends and saying, "See that? I did that." That's amazing. That's really powerful. David, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, over some of the last episodes, we've been talking about, well, things you can do while quarantined at home. And our reporter at large, Launchpad Merzari, has a few more to add to the list, and he sent us this.
Hey, airplane geeks. Your reporter at large, Launchpad Merzari here. Hey, got some more good stuff for you to watch and suggestions. The first one comes from Pipistrel Aircraft. Full disclosure, as many of you know, I work with Pipistrel Aircraft during the air show season, helping to sell their aircraft. But Pipistrel has decided to provide open access to all their online training materials during this period. Pipistrel's online courses typically go for about $160 to $270 for a permit subscription, and you can get it all on pipistrelonline.com. Our next example is from Glime Aviation. Glime is a training organization, and they are offering free online pilot proficiency course, free flight simulator software, and an IA refresher course, all for free. Next one is Sporties. They're offering a flight instructor refresher course online. That's usually $100, but they've decided to mark the price down to free. We'd also send you back to King Schools. They've increased the number of online courses they have for free up to 12 different courses. And last but not least, for those of you who've been following us, our good friends at Chicken Wings have released their second trailer for their upcoming video. And that's kind of fun to watch. We'll have the links to all of these videos in the show notes for you to watch. Use this time to do something productive. This is your reporter at large, Launchpad Merzari, frequency change approved.
All right. Thank you, Launchpad. And yeah, we'll have all those links in the show notes. I'll just mention that the Pipistrel online website is pipistrel-online.com, or hyphen if you swing that way. And the Chicken Wings trailer is hysterical. It's a parody of the Top Gun 2 Maverick trailer. And you really must watch that. If you haven't seen the Top Gun trailer, maybe go watch that first and then hit the link up on the show notes here and watch the Chicken Wings version of it. It's pretty clever.
Okay. And if you haven't watched the Top Gun trailer already, take your AvGeek card and rip it up and throw it away. You've lost that title.
Yeah. That was supposed to be released. Top Gun, the new Top Gun movie, was supposed to be released this month. And I think that's pushed out.
December 29th.
Oh, they have a date? Okay. We're going to be talking more about that on the show here in the future, because we have some interesting perspectives on that movie that we'll bring to you. All right. What's up with the geeks? David Vanderhoof, Anything new with you?
Well, I'm taking a little bit of Launchpad's lead, but for all of us who are not watching Rat Patrol, there's another series that I've discovered on Science Channel, which is called Black Files Declassified. Now, disclaimer. If you know anything about black budgets and top secret stuff like me and you know all about that stuff, yeah, take some of this with a grain of salt. But that being said, there are some really good historical interesting aspects. It's up to 6 episodes. It's a brand new series. We'll have links to the show notes. Talking about things that you don't normally get to hear about. In the very first episode, I was very impressed. They talked about they talk with the pilot who flew the first F-15 ASAT test, where they flew an F-15A with a very large rocket underneath it and launched the rocket to kill a satellite. And the pilot, the Brigadier General, who was the pilot who flew that mission, they have an interesting interview with. Their last episode, which is currently they're up to 6, was on the 160th Special Operations SOAR Aerial Regiment, which is the Army's Special Operations Helicopter Command, which is really interesting. You get to see little birds and Chinooks, and they talk a little bit about the training involved with being in Special Operations Aviation, and they put the host through a dunk tank test where they train him in a pool on how to jump out of helicopters. And I see our guest here smiling because he's probably had this test where they put you in a replica of a frog or a CH-46, sink it, and your job is to get out of it. So all 6 episodes so far have been interesting. They're not perfect, and there's a lot of hype to make you continue to watch, like a lot of those shows are. But there's some really good nuggets of interesting TV there for AvGeeks. So I recommend this series.
Very good. All right. We'll have that link in the show notes. And Max Trescott, how about you?
Oh, sorry, don't bother me. I'm sitting here watching Black Files Declassified right now. It sounds really good.
Yeah, it does sound good.
Which is good, because I have to say Rat Patrol is a little repetitive, but glad to see you've got some good recommendations there, David. Yeah, in addition to finishing up a book that I've been writing for many, many months now, I hope to get it out to the typesetter just in a couple of days, continue to do ground instruction via Zoom. So people who are working on various ratings need to have certain kinds of ground instruction logged in their book before they go to their check ride. Of course, the fun part is the flying part, the part that we often postpone for the rainy days or other times is the ground instruction. So I'm getting a lot of that done with some of my clients now. So that kind of fills in the day. It's amazing how fast the day goes by. I mean, it just one day just kind of blends into another.
It does.
Thursday.
Yeah. Well, I have one. Somebody wrote to me on LinkedIn, and I had the opportunity to add up how many episodes of Airplane Geeks I'd done, of the UAV Digest, of PaxX podcast. And I was kind of both excited and disappointed, because it turns out that this episode here that we're doing right now is the 1,004th podcast episode that I've done, which is kind of exciting, but I'm really kind of disappointed that I missed number 1,000. So I just wasn't paying attention to the numbers, but God, it's really hard to believe.
Which would have been what show?
It would have been episode 601, I think. Would have been the 1,000th episode.
Well, don't sweat it. We'll celebrate when you hit 2,000.
Yeah, right. I don't think I'll last that long. But all right. Hey, David Costa, anything going on with you aviation-wise that we haven't mentioned? Anything sort of topical?
We're in the same boat right now. We're getting ready to gear up for the people that are getting back out there to fly. So I work with people that own and operate high-performance aircrafts, Citation jets, turboprops, King Airs, TBMs. And so we're getting ready right now, and we're getting flooded with phone calls. They're all chomping at the bit, getting ready to fly. So we're getting ready to get them all some recurrent training. And what I'm finding is these fairly low budget simulators that local airports have access to are great resources. So ladies and gentlemen, if you're listening out there and you haven't flown for a while, call up your local FBO. They've got some great resources, and you can maintain all the social distancing you need to get out there and fly a simulator. Great procedures training. So that's what we've been doing in this quarantine days. And in addition to having our non-quarantine Friday night parties at the hangar where we don't distance and get out there and have a good time in the hangar. So. I don't follow rules very good. That's why I'm a friend.
Yeah, I had that impression. Yeah. All right.
Yeah. And finally, Launchpad has also sent us an update on what he's doing. He's got a little bit of news. Remember that Facebook booted Launchpad off? Well, he's got some news. Here he is.
Thanks, Max. Hey, I finally have resolved some of the issues with Facebook, and I'm back on Facebook. If our listeners will go out to Launchpad Marzari, that's me, and you can like the page, and I'll like you back, and we'll start producing some content. And I'm still negotiating with Facebook to get back 8 years worth of contact and contact lists, but we're starting over, so please reach out and say hello to me, because I miss all my aviation geeks and friends on Facebook.
All right, Launchpad, congratulations on that.
Yeah, and he said something there that kind of made sense. He said, my page. Facebook is set up so you have personal profiles, which is what most people do promote themselves and share stuff about themselves. And they have pages for businesses and organizations and things like that. They also have I forget the exact name of it, but it's the real name policy for profiles. And so if you're on, you know, if you have a profile page as a person, Facebook requires that you use your real name. And so it sounds like the compromise here is they said, hey, Mr. Launchpad, that's not your real name, but that's exactly what pages are for. So it sounds like he's restarting his site over on the pages side of Facebook.
All right. That stuff just confuses me.
I'm very lucky to have a Facebook employee in the family.
Oh, that would help. We heard from our friend Jamie Dodson, and he passed along some information, the long-awaited documentary on Pan Am. This is a new PBS documentary series about Pan Am Airways, produced in association with the Pan Am Historical Foundation. And the national release date is May 18th, 2020, and they've got 3 one-hour episodes lined up. The first is Airborne with airline, or about airline executive Juan Tripp, pilot Charles Lindbergh, and airplane builder Igor Sikorsky, radio engineer Hugo Luderitz. They join forces to build an airline to Latin America as Pan Am takes flight. And then the second episode is Latin Laboratory. Pan Am builds larger flying boats, harnesses radio for navigation as it dominates its service to Latin America. But Juan Tripp's plans to cross the Atlantic are dashed when Britain bars his planes from landing. I'm not sure what the history of that is, but that would be interesting. So he sets his sights on the Pacific instead. And then the third is Another Ocean. Pan Am builds an airway to Asia, allowing the China Clipper to hopscotch across the world's widest ocean, the Pacific, by landing at 5 stepping stone islands, those being Hawaii, Midway, Wake Island, Guam, and the Philippines. We'll put a link in the show notes for the website, which will also present you with a trailer for the series, but also tell you how you can view this series. It's called Across the Pacific. Of course, Jamie Dodson, he knows a thing or two about about Pan Am and the flying boats. He's co-author of Hunting the Wind, Pan American World Airways Epic Flying Boat Era, 1929 to 1946. And of course, Jamie's got several other books that he's authored as well. All right, moving on to listener mail. we heard from another David. We have a lot of Davids this episode. This is Dave. He says, during the global lockdown, United has been operating a considerable number of cargo-only flights to destinations it normally serves with passenger service. He says the bulk of these cargo flights have been utilizing their passenger 77W and 789 aircraft, which have the range to easily perform those missions. As demand increased, United added its 78X to the mix, mostly serving cargo hubs in Europe. And he says, imagine my surprise to see on April 18th, they dispatched a 78X instead of the usual 789 to Sydney. I thought it was just a reporting glitch, but he cross-checked several sources. And indeed, he's got the tail number of the flights and the mileage. Now, he says, what's interesting about this pair of flights is that they both significantly exceed the published maximum range of the 787-10 in the case of the outbound flight by 7%. He says this raised the question, how lightly loaded would those flights need to have been to give the aircraft the additional required range? He says, are there any special procedures or approvals needed to operate a commercial flight planned to exceed the aircraft's maximum published range? I can only speculate that this equipment swap was to enable a larger volume of lightweight PFE or similar cargo to be brought back to LAX. So I don't know the answer to the question. I don't know, is the published maximum range cast in stone? Are you able to exceed that under certain conditions? And if so, how? Either of you guys, any of you guys know the answer to that?
It's not a limiting factor for the aircraft at all. It's not in the limitations max range. Those are published for pilot use and for salespeople. But as long as you got adequate reserves, who knows? Could have had a tailwind, whatever. But there is no limitation on your range.
Okay, so it's more of a marketing measure.
In fact, there are some specifications for how it is to be measured so that people aren't just throwing numbers out willy-nilly. Yeah, I totally agree. You know, you have tailwinds, headwinds, all that affects your range. So, oh, and of course, the other thing is, you know, these planes were lightly loaded, and that also increases range. I have never seen a formula, though, for how much range gain you get for, you know, reduced weight load, but clearly it's a factor.
All right. We heard from Jovert. He said, listening to your latest episode, my comment is that the single point failure Boeing 737 MAX non-compliance was not an engineering decision, like you said. That was a business decision that was approved by the FAA. He says the FAA failed to see that they were approving a business case and not an engineering compliance material. He said, thank you for your podcasts. I enjoy every one of them. That's from Jovert.
Jovert.
That's probably more correct. Sorry, deepest apologies. The whole 737 MAX, I called it a debacle. There are just so many questions still in terms of how these decisions were made and who made them and who knew what the assumptions were that were implicit in the recommendations or in the decisions. And, you know, And is it with the airline? Is it with the regulator? Is it both? It's just kind of, I've said it before, this is going to make a fantastic case study in the future. I know David's got some thoughts.
I did an episode on the 737 MAX strictly from the pilot side, not from the design side. That's, you know, above my pay grade, but from the pilot side. So, you know, I don't want to promote my show and your show, but I did an episode on it as well. And it comes down to this: turn off the automation and fly the aircraft.
Yes. And David, it's a great episode, by the way. I thought it was really, really well done. Passionate, certainly. And I think you had some
just
really
a bit.
Great ideas. Yeah. Yeah. A different Dave. Boy, this is like, maybe that's going to be our show title or something, you know, David. Well, let's call it David. This is the David episode. So a different David wrote and said, I've fallen slightly behind, but just caught up on episode 600. Congratulations. And 601, he says, when you mentioned the idea of an David, you're going to like this. When you mentioned the idea of an aviation podcast by kids for kids, which is something I've been sort of noodling for couple of years, actually. He says, it struck an immediate chord for me. I've considered myself an airplane geek since my teen years spent plane spotting at Stapleton International Airport in Denver. My favorite memories of Stapleton included the easy access to a small park across the street from the apron of runway 26, right where I could try to be when a DC-10 was scheduled to land, passing just feet overhead. That's so cool. The same spot offered a good view of the parking area that hosted more rare visitors, including C-5A Galaxies bringing missile components and related cargo to and from Lockheed Martin's nearby operations and the occasional Air Force One sighting. He says, I could never quite believe the approaches flown by Dash 7s flying in from the mountains. Sometimes they would fly east over the terminal, complete a 180-degree right turn virtually inside the airport perimeter, and land on the ridiculously short runway 07 to the west. Definitely the epitome of a stall aircraft. That's cool. So he says, but he's got four immediate reactions to the idea of an aviation podcast by kids for kids. He says, first, yes, absolutely, this is a fantastic idea. Second, he said, this reminds me very much of a great TV show from years gone by, Popular Mechanics for Kids. I don't remember that. But he says two of the hosts have gone on to successful Hollywood careers. Third, he says, this really ought to be a global endeavor. You had quite the collection of guests join episode 600, including podcast hosts from other continents. You should see if they can help round up some local talent. And then fourth, he says, it would be really nice to see Zeke step up to his challenge. So, David, Zeke is our reigning youngest listener that we know about who, let me see if you get this right, who was 12, but now he's 13. He's also the youngest guest we've had on the podcast. We had Zeke come on and talk about flying the United Flight Simulator in Colorado. I mean, the United Flight Simulator in Colorado.
Very cool.
And for those who don't know Zeke, the crews of the flight simulator staff had fun knowing Zeke at the cockpit doing barrel rolls in a 747 over San Francisco and flying under the Golden Gate is probably not your normal flight training in that simulator.
Yeah, yeah. Dave says it's been really nice to see Zeke step up to this challenge, or if not him, another young fan from the audience. Then this is a great idea, too. He says there are high school aviation clubs around the country, and I'm sure within their ranks are some outgoing members willing to take on this challenge. So he says, I really enjoy the podcast, appreciate the effort that all the hosts put into keeping it going. And I think Dave's got some good comments here. I think I'm still kind of noodling the idea. I think it kind of needs a champion that I'm hoping isn't me, although more than happy to be, you know, technical advisor. But if you haven't heard, the dream is to have a show about aviation where it's hosted by and hopefully as much produced by youngsters, and we'd be happy to kind of support that effort if we can. So, more ideas are welcome.
It's a great idea. And I just looked up the Mechanics TV show. It was a Canadian series, which is why we probably didn't see it. Popular Mechanics for Kids. And they had a total of 72 episodes, ran four seasons, finishing up in 2000. So sounds like it was pretty successful in Canada.
Yeah. And David, maybe the young engineers, working on your jet project, you know, maybe there's some interesting way, maybe you've already thought of this, but maybe there's some interesting ways that they could capture the experience for a broader audience or something. I don't know. There's a lot of possibilities.
Well, that's, we are going to have them film it and make a series of videos on it. My daughters laugh at me when I get on video. You can see why looking at me. So I have a face built for radio, and both of my daughters giggle when I get on video. So we're going to let the kids do that part of it too.
Good. Excellent. Excellent. It could even maybe become a documentary. We heard from another listener who is not named David. This is from Michael. And he says, love the show, been an avid listener for years. Brian Coleman interviewed me and my 10-year-old daughter at Plains of Fame last year. I remember that. I really do. So Michael says, I've become friends with Brian, and we were texting about how my company, General Public LLC, is, or was before COVID-19, an art manufacturing company in Santa Barbara, California. He says, my sister, Portia DeRossi, and I retooled our business during the shutdown and have been manufacturing face shields for healthcare providers. He thought, he being Brian, thought I should drop you a note and tell you about my recent GA flying, which he's going to do. But first, Portia DeRossi, the Portia DeRossi?
Yes, yes. That's his sister. They're both from Australia, wow. By the way. They grew up in Australia,
yeah.
Then moved to the U.S. Great folks.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, anyway, he says, I've made multiple flights in my Cirrus SR-22T from California to Arizona and New Mexico to meet representatives from Native American healthcare facilities and donate face shields. That is really, really cool. There was a story on, I think, CBS just recently about the Navajo Nation and how that's being really decimated by the coronavirus. Max T, what's an SR-22T?
That would be the high-end piston aircraft available from Cirrus. So the T says that it's turbocharged. It's now a five-place aircraft, and it's one of the ones that I do most of my training in these days.
Yeah. Without the T, it's not turbocharged?
Yep, that's correct. And I know, Michael, because we actually did some consulting over the phone on something a while back ago.
Oh, nice. So how much power does the turbocharger give you?
Well, so the aircraft is a 310 horsepower engine, and the turbocharger just helps you maintain that power level up through flight level 250. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Makes sense. So where are we? I'm lost. Okay. So this is interesting. He said, yesterday's flight took me over KVCV, Southern California Logistics Airport at Victorville, California. It's one of those desert Californian airports that stores aircraft or an aircraft graveyard. I was amazed to see how many airliners were there. So many, in fact, their parking areas were at capacity, so they decided to close a runway, a taxiway, and other non-movement areas to jam as many in as possible. No doubt many of the airliners are Maxes, but I'm sure there are countless casualties of COVID-19. And he said, I thought you enjoy some pictures. So he sent us a number of photos, and we'll put those in the show notes, some shots from the air from about 17,000 feet. And it really shows the area and the aircraft parked there. Victorville is an interesting place. It's kind of like an AvGeek Mecca in some ways, because there are a number of different kinds of aviation companies and businesses and startups and weird things that come and go over the years. You mentioned to Michael that I almost got a trip to Victorville once, a business trip, but it fell through and I was enormously disappointed.
Before or after it was an Air Force base?
Yeah, after.
And I think it's probably one of the few airports in the country where revenues are up sharply in the last month or two.
Oh, is that right?
Well, you look at all the planes that are parked there. Each of them is paying a fee. Yeah, you know, the airlines The airlines look for the cheapest place to park those aircraft. They don't want to park them all at Atlanta or O'Hare, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Well, and not to mention the climate's perfect for storing airplanes.
Sure. So Michael closes, you and your team are awesome. Thank you for putting out this high-quality podcast. Thanks for the kind words. He says, I love receiving the notification each week. There is a new episode to devour. So I'll take the opportunity. So if you're not subscribed to the podcast, that way it'll show up automatically in your podcast app of choice. You can add the Renegade Aviator to that subscription list as well. Be sure to do that. But if you go old school and prefer to get email notifications, there's something called subscribebyemail.com. And if you go to subscribebyemail.com and just type in Airplane Geeks or Renegade Aviator or almost anything else, then it will set you up to receive an email every time a new episode is out. And as I recall, there's a player in it as well, so you can listen right from the email if you want. And if you're worried about, you know, privacy or that kind of thing, it's a service provided by Blueberry, which is a media hosting company that can be trusted. I wouldn't worry about giving them your email address. All right. Well, I think that's it for this episode of the Airplane Geeks podcast. We want to thank David Costa for joining us this episode. David, it's been a real joy to have you on. You really were almost painfully well-behaved.
I've been trying. You can say I'm trying. I'm on the edge, but I love it. You guys are great. This was a great opportunity, and I'm thankful for it.
And, of course, find David at renegadeaviator.com. Renegade AV8R. And you find us at airplanegeeks.com. Show notes for this episode are at airplanegeeks.com/603. And as always, you can reach us at email at thegeeks@airplanegeeks.com. All right, Max Trescott, where do folks find you?
Well, I should add that when I started joining the show here earlier, I had my Australian hat on to look like the Rat Patrol guy. So that was kind of fun. We do our recordings now with a video, which doesn't get saved, but it's just kind of fun for us. So we kind of do some kooky things just for fun when we're recording here. Anyway, the usual place you can find me is out at aviationnewstalk.com. Just click on contact at the top of the page.
And David Vanderhoof, how about you?
Well, you can find me lurking on our Slack listener team, and the best way to do that would be send us an email to thegeeks@airplanegeeks.com, and we'll send you an invite, and you can join the conversations there. You can always find me on Facebook and Twitter and all of the other places, and of course, you can find me talking about drones with that guy Max Flight on the UAV Digest on Friday mornings.
All right. And, of course, you can find me on Twitter at Max Flight. Look for me on LinkedIn, as David says, at theuavdigest.com. Also with Mary Kirby talking about the passenger experience at paxxpodcast.com. So please join us again next week as we talk aviation on the Airplane Geeks podcast. Bye, everybody.
Keep the blue side up.
See ya.
And thanks for listening.
Hey, Max. In the last episode, we talked about Boeing canceling its merger deal with Embraer. There was a penalty of about $120 million. Does that have to be paid in cash, or will they accept payment in the form of undelivered brand new 737s? Yeah, just go out and pick any three out of the lot, your choice. And to show you there's no hard feelings, we'll even gas it up and restock the beverage carts before you go. And the warranty's still good on all of them. Just go pick any three. That's how I picture the deal going down for Boeing.